All right. We're on paper 18. Section 4, which is old single column, page 210. Which is interesting. I just noticed that. You'll see that right away in the first sentence when we read it. I picked up on that. That's pretty fun. Okay, so remember, you know, we have this two paper block here on Trinity origin beings. You know, remember, in contrast to the little more complex and difficult issue of the supreme spirits that we did in the previous two papers, here a little more definitively individuated, father-like Trinity origin beings. And we were working our way down from the Father's worlds with the seven supreme executives. I mean that, not seven supreme executives, the Trinity secrets of supremacy, excuse me. They'll come up tonight. That's why it was in my head. But the Trinity secrets of supremacy, the eternals of days, and the ancients of days coming down. And now we're ready for the perfections of days at the major sector level. So let's just jump in and we'll get ourselves spun up on some of the other details.
Paper 18, the Supreme Trinity Personalities, Section 4, the Perfections of Days. There are just 210 perfections of days, and they preside over the governments of the 10 major sectors of each superuniverse. They were trinitized for the special work of assisting the superuniverse directors. They rule as the immediate and personal vicegerents of the Ancients of Days.
Okay, so just absorb that, okay, because this, you know, like I said, we got to get ourselves kind of spun up where we were last time. Remember what it is that they're tying us back into. Okay, so the personal vicegerents of the Ancients of Days. In other words, very, very close to the Ancients of Days in all ways, except, of course, they're not God. Remember, they're divine, very, very perfectly so, hence the name. Okay? They're not God. And so specifically, you know, what they're trying to get you to recognize right away is, remember how we had that statement with the Ancients of Days, that they were super perfect, uniform, and super perfect. Okay, they've got that in mind. That you know, statement about the Ancients of Days, tied to the name they chose for the next group down, the Perfections of Days. So, think about in terms of just the nature of the divine quality, let's just say it that way, you know, basically the self that's in play, they're equally perfect, the Ancients of Days and the Perfections of Days. You know, so the Perfections of Days have all of that basic perfection of the Ancients of Days. They just don't have that God thing. They're not personalized deity, you know, and so that's why, just like when we were talking about the seven supreme executives, see, that's why it's coming up right away, I had it in my head, and we were talking about the contrast between the Ancients of Days being super perfect, uniform and super perfect compared to the uniform and perfect with the seven supreme executives, you know, so you have this contrast as well. So you have kind of an equal perfection between the seven supreme executives and the Perfections of Days, and you're not really going to call either of them God, you know, very definitively, not the Perfections of Days. You're not going to call them God. But you add in that personalized deity component, and they're saying, so it's like that, only above, so it's super perfect. So that's why they chose that word.
How many Ancients of Days are there?
So there's three in each super universe, times seven, so there's 21. Okay, and so here you see you have 210 because you have 10 major sectors, you know, in each superuniverse. Okay, so, and again, three on each capital. just like the Ancients of Days. So that's the that's what's between the lines with that, saying that they're the vicegerents of the Ancients of Days. They're trying to stress that, you know, they've got it all happening except that God thing. All right, what else do they say?
Three perfections of days are assigned to each major sector capital, but unlike the Ancients of Days, it is not necessary that all three be present at all times. From time to time, one of this trio may absent himself to confer in person with the Ancients of Days concerning the welfare of his realm.
Okay, so now there's a whole bunch of linkage back. You notice these two little paragraphs are set off. There's a whole bunch of linkage back to the discussion we had last time on that one, too. So let's start with that that issue of from time to time, one of this trio may absent himself. Okay, so remember, they said you have three Ancients of Days, and they can never leave the Super Universe headquarters. But they did mention that relative to some issues, one Ancient of Days can function adequately, properly. Some issues it takes two, and some it takes three. And we pointed out that fundamentally is because when it's just an individuality issue, one can do it. If it's an associativity issue, two are necessary. When it's a full-blown unity issue, then three are necessary. You know, and since we have these three levels in the super universe, the unity level at the headquarters, associativity level at the major sector, individuality at the minor sector, you know, you've got those three levels, unity, associativity, individuality. See, when you drop down to the associativity level, where that's fundamentally rooted in the super universe, you're going to have to always have two Ancients of Days there to handle the associativity. At any time, you know, there can never be a break in that. But they don't always have to do something relative to unity, like the Ancients of Days, you know, are always doing. You know, have to be ready to do some unity thing. So one of them can be away. All right, so that's the pattern. Just drop down. And then that last part. From time to time, one of this trio may absent himself to confer in person. To confer in person with the Ancients of Days concerning the welfare of his realm. Remember when we had that really great opportunity to talk some more about the contrast between self and personality? You know, back when we were talking about the secrets of supremacy. And that issue of, you know, what's the difference between a secret that the mindful self thinks it has and a personality secret that absolutely is. Okay? And we talked about how one way to think about, if you can imagine, even with what you might try to imagine with the reflectivity mechanism, if you can imagine that you could tell someone your quote-unquote secret over a communication mechanism of any sort, including the reflectivity mechanism, then it's not a personality secret. It's not literally a personality issue. If it's transferable like that, it's just a mindful self issue. It's an energy issue. It can be transferred over by some energy means, even really fancy energy, you know, means that are very transcendent, like the reflectivity mechanism. Okay. See, here's an example. You have a perfection of days. You know, he's got, you know, you can't have a more fundamental linkage to the reflectivity mechanism, which is the highest communication connectivity there is. Okay, but that's not adequate. All of his perfection and all of that connectivity are inadequate. He has to actually go to Yversa, in our case, go to the Super Universe headquarters to confer in person. There's a personality interaction that needs to occur. It's not just knowledge, of some high sort that can be transferred by communication mechanism. The purposing, the patterning of the content is essential And that can only be done point-to-point personal contact. And the very fact that that's confusing, it's hard to know, well, what exactly are you talking about? That's the whole point, to really drive home that by and large, none of us in this room know what the difference is in any profound way between self and personality. But we are starting to understand that just about everything we've ever called personality is not. It's just self. Okay? And yourself is a complete open book. It does, and it's not just because you're a creature. Take a simple example. A creator son. Okay? He's got a mindful self, full of all kinds of thought forms. Literally, you know, standing on Uversa is a Sakanafim, an angel. That Sakanafim knows every single thought in our Creator Son's head. There's not one shred of his mindful self that isn't an open book to that Sakanafim. That Sakanafim can stand before the Ancient of Days and tell that Ancient of Days anything that's in Michael's head. He has no way to somehow secret that's any part of that self from the all-seeing eye. And that's just one individual. Okay, the whole universe is like that. Mindful selves are open books. You know, and you can begin to appreciate that a little more fundamentally, why that must be, because mind... Because, you know, because mind is not individuated. Mind is is a contiguous, uniform phenomenon. Okay, and so, there's no way that you can somehow put some kind of a wall around this individuated mind that you, because it's not individuated. It's an open book by definition. Okay, but this whole issue of personality connectivity, okay, that's a different matter. Okay? That can have a definitive separateness. And why is that? Because unlike the common mind that we're all using, your personality is absolutely unique. So it's not so much that you're choosing to have your personality not be, its literal functioning not be known by others. It can't be known by others because it's absolutely separate from others, except for one person, one special person that really is not even technically a person in the sense we are, the Universal Father, that super person, that has this individual personal relationship with each of us. Okay.
What is different when they're together as two persons rather than talking on the telephone?
Right. See, that's the question. What is the difference? And I can't adequately answer that. But I know that's the case. I mean, if reflectivity was adequate, that perfection of days would not make that journey. Somehow, there's something that we really don't appreciate yet that really is our personality. The pattern that we impose upon things has to be connected with, in situ. It can't be... So, to think about, when we talk about, like we did last time, the difference between knowledge and truth, for instance. That knowledge is a knowingness that can be given. You remember the ledge part means it can be given. Yeah, you can know truth, but it's not knowledge. It isn't a knowingness that can be given. It's very fundamentally personal. The difference between, say, even between truth and wisdom. Wisdom just in and of itself is a subjective fact and mindful. Okay, but to actually engage someone personally, this conference that they're having, They're bearing something together, confer. Somehow, the two patterns are able to engage each other and connect, relate, okay, in a much more profound way than really any of us have ever experienced. But we will begin to experience it, you know, the next life when we're a little more liberated and we start to mature. We're going to discover a way of connecting to another that we've never really imagined yet. An actual personal linkage that that just will have an amazingly transcendent intimacy to it.
Yeah. So, since the Ancients of Days can't leave, you're saying that the reflectivity system can handle what it can handle.
Right.
Which is most everything.
Right.
But whenever there's a personal connection that has to be made,
yeah,
all those persons, including Michael and
right,
these guys, and not only below but above,
mm-hmm,
would have to come to,
yep,
the Ancients of Days,
yep,
face-to-face kind of deal.
Right. For instance,
so they have to have a transportation system, yeah, kind of like the reflectivity system.
Right. Well, when you're talking about Trinity origin beings, they can travel very, very fast. Okay. Not quite as fast as a solitary messenger, but I mean, very fast.
They can get there
very fast. Yeah. For others, you know, it's going to take longer. But you know, to your point of even coming down from above, if an Eternal of Days needs to have a personal confab with one of the Ancients of Days, he has to come out from Havona and stand on Uversa. Stand on, I mean, so, you know, they come out and these guys go up. And if you read about that Sakanafim that reflects, there's a Sakanafim that reflects each of the Creator Sons. If you read about that, you'll notice that they very precisely say in there that if what the Ancient Days wants to know is the mind of the Creator Son, okay, then this Sakanafim can reflect that. If there's a personal relationship that's needed, no, then Michael's going to have to journey. Yeah. Okay, so just, you know, wanted to use that to drill that home again. And, you know, so just let that mystery be present in your mind going forward and just see if you can begin to at least allow for greater and greater differential between the self and this mysterious higher nature that's a personalized self that you'd like to become more familiar with. Less and less fixated on the not personalized self that's mortal and is going to die. All right. Okay, so that's kind of the mechanics. See, those first two little paragraphs kind of give us some of the mechanics. And let's get some more of the general things.
I just wanted to say embrace comes to mind. They often use the term to embrace. In the embrace,
yeah.
That makes you think.
As long as you said that. I mean, think with that word embrace, you know, there's an encompassment sort of a sense to that, okay? Oneness, you know, in contrast to unity. Oneness is encompassment. Okay, and oneness is like the reservoir of all personality, that's the infinite one. Okay, it's a reservoir of oneness. And so when it's personal connection, it is an embrace. Okay, and there's comprehension, you're wrapping around. Okay, there's a mutual encompassment. And see, like I said, an intimacy that's much greater than just two co-located energy blobs, you know, interacting, you know, with sparks or something. Okay, some sort of a much more intimate meshing, oneness to oneness, and what that must be. That's what you want to be intrigued by. I want to strive for that. I don't want to be satisfied with, you know, just the energy interaction.
It's probably what makes Trinitization possible.
Yeah, certainly, yeah.
These triune rulers of the major sectors are peculiarly perfect in the mastery of administrative details, hence their name, Perfections of Days. In recording the names of these beings of the spiritual world, we are confronted with the problem of translating into your tongue, and very often it is exceedingly difficult to render a satisfactory translation. We dislike to use arbitrary designations, which would be meaningless to you. Hence, we often find it difficult to choose a suitable name, one which will be clear to you and at the same time be somewhat representative of the original.
Okay. So just, you know, reinforcing, talking about why they call them perfections. You know, we talked about quite a bit, but just notice how they say peculiarly perfect. You know, can you answer that question? Why did they put, you know, that adverb? They're peculiarly, if I can even say it, peculiarly perfect. What's the peculiarness? They've got everything that an Ancient of Days has in the way of perfection, except the personalized deity, the God thing. Okay, that's why they say peculiarly. All right, now that, and the rest of that paragraph is very, very important to the whole book. You get what that said there? Okay, they just gave you a very important clue about the words that they coin in the book, the names, or just the, you know, the common words that they coin in the book. They're not arbitrary designations. They're not, you know, so see, it says it point blank here. They're not just pronounceable sequences of letters. Okay, they have an etymology. They have a meaning, a literal meaning. You can seek that literal meaning. You know, it was long after I had that thought. I wonder if these things have an actual etymology, and I started discovering them. You know, that I've discovered there's an actual paragraph in the book that literally says it that I hadn't noticed. Okay, and it says it right point blank there, see? So that's the challenge they put in front of you. Can you figure out the literal meaning of the words that they've coined? Or if it's, you know, if it's just a word we already have, like perfection, can you understand why they used it? And, okay, it says somewhat representative of the original. So they don't mean, like, literally translating, almost like transcribing. Okay, they're not thinking that. And so when they say translating into your tongue, you know, a satisfactory translation, what do they mean, translation? It's not like they're taking the super universe word, you know, and pronouncing the syllables and somehow it's like, well, that's kind of like the letter A in Latin. And, you know, they're not doing that. So what are they translating? The truths, exactly. It's not a factual translation. It's a truthful translation. Okay? And we, that's what we were discovering, the truth of the name Perfections of Days. In truth, they're just like the Ancients of Days. In fact, no. But in truth, yes. Okay, you know, hence their name. Always be on the lookout for, you know, this is the last place you'd expect to have some very definitive statement about, you know, how they constructed the book, you know, buried in the Perfections of Days section. They do that all the time. Always be looking for those little clues that that really get you over a new threshold of discovery.
Yep. So, like, if they say they're spiritual, so does that mean, like, when we, I don't know if we'll ever see them or not, but are they just like beings of light?
That's one of the unfortunate things about mankind's history with trying to depict spiritual beings. You know, they always, you know, try to depict some sort of a vague, fuzzy, you know. No, these are very definitive. You know, just as definitive as the boundary between the air and my skin. Okay, spirit is a substance. Okay, it's not a subtle fog. You know, it's a literal substance. Where did we read that? Oh yeah, back at the end of the Eternals of Days section, you know, they're talking about the worlds, and they said the architecture, natural embellishment, Maranatha structures, and spirit creations are exclusive. You know, they're reminding you that you go to these architectural spheres and you have literal things built out of spirit substance. And that should really remind, you know, or really bring it home that when you're talking about a body, just because it's predominantly spirit energy rather than material energy doesn't mean it isn't definitive. It's a form. It's located here, not there. Okay, it's very definitive still. You'll be able to stub your toe on spirit substance when you have a spirit toe. Okay, so right, it's not right. It's not another material atom. Okay, it's not even one of the Maranja atoms. Okay, we have no idea what the quote unquote periodic table, if there is one, of spirit substance. We know about all we know is you can take the spiritual unity that you have in Havona and you can reflect it out as a sevenfold individuation. You know, so you can make seven different flavors of that, in the seven different super universes. And so when we're talking about a spiritual world, like they're saying here, a spiritual world like Uversa. Uversa is one of those seven flavors of unity, but there's a higher unity in Havona before it gets, you know, reflected out through each, you know, one of each of the master spirits, you know, to a downstepped unity, as it were, an individuated unity in a particular super universe. Okay, so, but exactly what I mean by that, of course, I don't know. I haven't stubbed my toe on spirit substance yet, so I can't give you a precise description of what it's like. But I know it's literal, and I keep trying to remind myself of that and work with that. You know, I don't let it be fuzzy in my mind. All right. Okay, so actually, before you read that, let me just say up front, they're about to throw out a whole mouthful of proper names here. All of them, you kind of get that sense from it, all of them are various Trinity origin or Trinity related, trinitized, even re-trinitized beings. Okay, it's Trinity, Trinity, Trinity. All these they're going to give you just in a little thumbnail sketch. They're saying, you know, as you read through the book, there's a whole bunch of different Trinity beings. Well, they're all working together in a complex orchestra in the Trinity government of the super universe. Okay, so let's just get the details here.
The perfections of days have a moderate-sized core of divine counselors, perfectors of wisdom, and universal censors attached to their governments. They have still larger numbers of mighty messengers, those high in authority and those without name and number. But much of the routine work of a major sector affairs is carried on by the celestial guardians and the high sun assistants. These two groups are drawn from among the trinitized offspring of their Paradise Havona personality, of either Paradise Havona personalities or glorified mortal finaliters. Certain of these two orders of creature trinitized beings are re-trinitized by the paradise deities and then are dispatched to assist in the administration of the super universe governments.
Now they go on in the next one, but before quickly. Okay, so those first three, divine counselors, perfectors of wisdom, universal censors, we're going to read about those in the next paper. Those are, again, directly Trinity origin beings. Then you have the mighty messengers, those high in authority and those without name and number. Those are mortals that have ascended all the way to paradise, been inducted into the core of finality, and then snatched out by the paradise trinity, you know, and trinitized, you know, into these three different categories, depending on their nature. Then you have celestial guardians and high sun assistants. And like they're saying there, now those, they're either a paradise Havona. You can be a paradise citizen or a Havona native. It doesn't matter. Mixing them together into a group. Two of those, you know, creating a creature trinitized son. Creating, quote unquote, trinitizing a creature trinitized son. Or two finaliters, trinitizing a creature trinitized son, but not a paradise of owner with a finaler. Those are different. Those trinitized sons of destiny, those are extremely high. They're not involved here. Those become wards of the architects, the master architects. That's a very transcendent absonite phenomenon, basically. Okay, but when it's like to like, either two perfect beings or two perfected beings trinitizing, those get sifted into these two different categories of celestial guardians and high sun assistants. We mentioned them before when we were talking about the seven supreme executives, and I got it right that time. the seven supreme executives, along with the Eternals of Days, all the stuff going on in the central universe, are involved in some initial training of these creature trinitized sons. And then some of them get re-trinitized, like they're talking about here, okay, and then go into service out in the super universes. So that's the very complex path for them. Okay, and let's pick up. The whole aspect of the Trinity embracing this individual and remolding their self. Like literally take that finality, that becomes a mighty messenger, say. The Paradise Trinity grabs a hold of that mindful self and reforms it, changes the nature of that individual. It's still the same person that's same personality is identified with it, but it's a different self. It's been reformed into a different self. Okay? Now a stationary self rather than an ascending self.
Because it's Trinity influence like that, would it have a greater mother influence?
Right. Just the very fact that, that we're talking about creature trinitized sons, again, we can do that because when we go out as finalities, we're God the Mother revealing. We have that definitive, we've acquired a definitive God the Mother nature, tied back to the Trinity, that we now can manifest very overtly. Yeah, and so they become part of the totality attitude. Rather than, this much more independent point individual, to be embraced by the Paradise Trinity, say, and become a mighty messenger, it's like, okay, everything changes. Your whole future is just completely changed there. No longer are you going to be this much more individualized fact. You're now part of the totality attitude, and you serve the totality attitude. And your intense individuality is taking a back seat.
Okay. You mentioned the Trinity snatching. Isn't there a choice by the individual involved in this?
There's a recognition that this is perfectly who you are. It's just like, for instance, I don't choose to be a sun-fused mortal. I'll just discover that one day. If I ascend all the way to Salvington and I haven't fused yet, I'll make an amazing discovery. Oh my goodness, this whole time I thought I was a father fuser. I'm actually a sun fuser. It's a self-discovery phenomenon as opposed to a choice. The deeper you had been hidden, and think about this finaliter. No idea. You might suspect, let's say you're Eleonora. Okay, you're a sender, you're Eleonora, and that panoption, and you did that really amazing standing up, for your planet when the planetary prince rebelled. You can be pretty suspicious that when you get to paradise one day, you're going to be grabbed by the Paradise Trinity and become a mighty messenger. Okay, but it's not like you know for certain. It's just a deeper you is finally revealed. In the wake of all that effort to liberate your potential, it took all the way to paradise to get the shackles off of you, essentially, to the point where the real you could finally shine forth, and lo and behold, you're a mighty messenger, not a finaliter.
I have a question. Finaliter that's trinitized, are they a different category of finaliter, or are there no longer
finaliters? Yep, they're taken off the finaliter record. They're snatched out of the core of finality. Yeah. As soon as they're inducted in, nope. you can certainly anthropomorphize it a bit with an element of surprise. It's like, you know, you're going along minding your own business, and yeah. Next thing you know, everything changes. You know, who knows? One of us could be one of those without name and number, you know, and we won't know for a very long time. All right, so then a little bit more. They throw in a little bit more of the details of these Trinity-related beings.
Most of the celestial guardians and the high sun assistants are assigned to the service of the major and the minor sectors. But the Trinitized custodians, Trinity-embraced seraphim and midwayers, are the officers of the courts of all three divisions, functioning in the tribunals of the Ancients of Days, the Perfections of Days, and the Recents of Days. The Trinitized ambassadors, Trinity-embraced ascendant mortals of sun or spirit-fused nature, may be encountered anywhere in a super-universe, but the majority are in the service of the minor sectors.
Okay, so notice they bring in a couple more there. You've got Trinitized custodians. And since we haven't, you know, we haven't studied any of these, they give you a little parenthetical there. So, you know, as a mortal, you know, you're ascending through the super universe into Havona, finally get to paradise. I mean, you know, for instance, you've got your guardian angels going along with you. And midwayers could be involved in a similar ascension track. So seraphim and midwayers also can get all the way to paradise. And, you know, some of them could get inducted into the core of finality, you know, even the core of mortal finality, snatched out, okay, and made a Trinitized custodian. Okay, so the Trinity embracing them. Okay. And then the other one, the Trinitized ambassadors. So normally, a spirit fuser, their ascension just goes up to the local universe headquarters. You know, they're in, you know, like in our case, those are Nebadon spirit fusers. They ascend, just, you know, along with us, they ascend up to the local universe headquarters, and that's their perfection point. They're inducted into the Nebadon core perfection. And then they go into that horizontal mode of getting completion in the local universe, and then they're finally inducted into the Nebadon core of completion. Okay, but some spirit ascenders get a phone call. Okay, some spirit-fused mortals get a phone call from on high. Say, we'd like you to come on up. And they ascend up. And some of them, when they get all the way, you know, up to paradise, lo and behold, they get embraced by the Trinity. Okay, same way with the sun fusers. Normally, you know, their ascension stops, their perfection point is at the super universe headquarters, and then they go into a horizontal completion mode. But some of them get a phone call, and they move on up.
I thought I turned my phone off.
Right? So, you know, in other words, with all this, you know, see, there's a million different paths, but notice that it all ends up in a Trinity embrace. No matter what the path might be, the totality attitude, the totality attitudes that is the functioning of the Paradise Trinity can embrace any, you know, differential, any path. They all could be embraced. And they're just pointing out that, you know, one way or another, an awful lot do. And they all end up being part of this complex Trinity government. You know, not the Father's government, not the Son's government, not the Spirit's government. The fourth fact, the Trinity's government. The super universe is the Trinity's government. Just like Havona is the Trinity's, not the Father, Son, or Spirit. So that's, they have their own circuits. The seven circuits of Havona, that's the Paradise Trinity's. And the Eternals of Days are Trinity origin. It's all Trinity. All right, and so that's, you know, I wanted to stress that because, I mean, you know, if it's not obvious, I mean, how radically different is that thought than anything that humans have dreamt up in monotheism? I mean, that's just a very different thing. I mean, you don't even have this fourth fact called the Paradise Trinity to start with, and now you've got it being the key player in all of what's running everything. Yeah. I mean, the Father, Son, and Spirit are starting to look an awful lot like they're behind the scenes. Yeah, well, think about that. The Universal Father, the Eternal Son, the Infinite Spirit, or the Conjoined Actor, they're existential, you know, persons. They're transcendental. Okay? They're the gods of transcendence. They are behind the scenes. They're on the outside. They're not within. The Paradise Trinity has the means to be within, the totality attitude within. Okay, so that's, it's just a huge step, but that's the whole point of the fifth epical revelation, to make that transformation and begin to discover that, you know, the source of experiential deity, the Paradise Trinity, and its withinness, God as immanence. The God that's immanent with you, not the God that's transcendent and poked his finger in and sparked you into existence, but it's just into existence, not into experience. Experiential deity leads you through experience. Existential deity just initiates you. Okay. Now you'll see we get another little loose end tied up here, too.
Before the times of the full unfolding of the governmental scheme of the seven superuniverses, practically all administrators of the various divisions of these governments, excepting the Ancients of Days, served apprenticeships of varying duration under the Eternal of Days on the various worlds of the perfect Havona universe. The later Trinitized beings likewise passed through a season of training under the Eternal of Days before they were attached to the service of the Ancients of Days, the Perfection of Days, and the Recents of Days. They are all seasoned, tried, and experienced administrators.
Okay, so that's all pretty straightforward. Just reminding you, all these, like I was just saying, it's all related to experiential deity and Trinity. So there's, you know, experienced administrators. They all go through training with those Trinity origin beings, the Eternals of Days, in Havona, the Trinity's domain. Accepting the Ancients of Days. Okay. Because they're God. Okay. And there's a little subtext here. Think about what this is telling you. This whole question of when they tell you indirectly in the Lucifer Rebellion paper, like I was saying last time, that a rough back of the envelope calculation of how long the super universe governments have been in existence. You know, you do that calculation and you get 300 trillion years. You know, it's like the Uversa government has been, you know, up and rolling for 300 trillion years. So you say, well, okay, that's probably, you know, maybe a reasonable first guess about how old an Ancient of Days is. 320 years, but maybe there was some time before that. Well, this is saying, well, yeah, maybe a little, but probably not a lot, because there was no training, see? So probably they're created, they're trinitized, and just as soon as, in our case, Uversa is built, they're probably out here. So that's probably a pretty good estimate of how ancient an Ancient of Days is that 300 trillion years. Yeah. So again, you see, it's just a little parenthetical. The 300 trillion is in the Lucifer Rebellion paper. They're giving an example of if let's say it takes 300,000 years from the rebellion beginning until it's fully adjudicated. The 200,000 it's already been, and I say, even if it took another 100,000, so it was 300,000 altogether. They say, in relative terms, that span of time compared to how long the super universe government has been in play, the ratio of those two is the same ratio as the average length of a human to relative to 2.5 seconds. So like 80 years compared to 2.5 seconds. Okay, so and that ratio is 1 to 1 billion. Okay, so 300,000 becomes 300 trillion for an estimate of how long the super universe government and probably about how old an Ancient of Days is.
Do you have any insight as to what they mean when they say administrator?
Think of the literal word, and you can appreciate where they would like you to go. I mean, the difference between minister and administer is just the prefix ad. And we think of mercy ministers like angels as in a very personal, intimate way. Think of an administer just as perfectly intimate and personal, and not that cold, bureaucratic, See, you want to really let go of that. Think of it more literally. They're always doing that with the words. They want you to use the true spirit of the word to recognize, its place in the cosmos. So it's the difference between ministry and administry, that prefix, means two. Okay, so you're kind of bringing out your finger and you're pointing very definitively. It's not such a blanket thing as ministry. And we often talk about the angels are kind of the ones that carry the soft blanket to wrap around us when things are getting prickly, when we need some mercy ministry. But an administer, it's like, okay, here's a problem, and they go right to it, and they minister to that thing. But it still is going to have all of the big picture and all of the grace. And okay, let's see. No, I lost. Let's see. Where were we? That was it. Just that point. See, always try to keep some of these little mysteries that you'll come across in minds, because you'll be reading along. It's like accepting the Ancients of Days. That little parenthetical is a clue that ties to paper. What is that? 57 or whatever the problems of the Lucifer Rebellion. Points in the book that are way, separated. You have to connect it all together.
You will early see the perfections of days when you advance to the headquarters of Splandon after your sojourn on the worlds of your minor sector. For these exalted rulers are closely associated with the 70 major sector worlds of higher training for the ascendant creatures of time. The perfections of days in person administer the group pledges to the ascending graduates of the major sector schools. The work of the pilgrims of time on the world surrounding a major sector headquarters is chiefly of an intellectual nature, in contrast with the more physical and material character of the training on the 7 educational spheres of a minor sector, and with the spiritual undertakings on the 490 university worlds of a super universe headquarters.
I was just flipping forward. It's 54 is the problems of the Lucifer Rebellion. You remember that. Of course, 57 is the start of the part 3. Okay, here's another one. Okay, it seems like it's all pretty straightforward, but there's an important little clue, and it's kind of curious that this is left to be a clue, but so you're reading along, and you see him mentioning the 70 major worlds. And and it seems like, okay, we're just talking about the perfections of days and how we're going to definitely get to be real close to them personally, because they're going to be really involved in our education there on those 70 worlds. But remember when we were talking about the architectural spheres here a few papers back, and there's a curious lack of just direct specificity about whether or not the minor sector and major sector headquarters worlds have sub-satellites. You know, they definitely talk very directly about satellites, but they don't mention sub-satellites. And your first thought is, well, it must be, you know, this, it must be parallel to the local system and the constellation, and they have sub-satellites, okay? But right here, you see, it's like, no, this looks pretty definitive that they don't, because they, you know, they mention 70 and 7 and 490, okay? The same time that they tell you about the total of satellites and sub-satellites at the Super Universe headquarters, 490, they just say 7 and 70. So I think that makes it pretty definitive that there aren't sub-satellites. Now, why, I'm not sure, but there aren't sub-satellites around the minor sector and major sector headquarters. Just the 7 satellites and the 70 satellites. And you remember how the 490 is? You know, you either have 7 satellites or 70. Those are the only two variations. And so around Uversa, you have, you know, in a string of pearls, you've got 70 primary satellites. And then each of those has 6 sub-satellites. And then they're broken up into chains, you know, segments of 7, or, you know, into seven segments, you know, 10 each. So there's 7 divisions of major ones. You know, and so they talk about these 7 clusters going around. Yeah, but what that is 10 majors, each with 6 around. Okay. So, you know, rather than some sort of fancy flowery arrangement of, you know, it's just this basic Havona-like circuit of 70, you know, with a little mini circuit of 6 around it. You know, that's the same way as this local universe headquarters, same way as Salvington. Everything is the same, except it's broken up into 10 groups instead of 7 groups. 10 groups of 7 rather than 7 groups of 10. Because, again, you have the sevenfold unity at Uversa, the tenfold individuality at Salvington. Okay, and that's as close as it gets. That indirect, and I still haven't figured out why don't they just point blank say they don't have sub-satellites? I don't know. It's kind of a curious thing. Okay, but here you see him just stressing what we've been talking about a number of times, that you have these three levels, unity, down to associativity, down to individuality, or another way of talking about it, you have the spiritual undertakings, you know, the unity level at the headquarters, the intellectual nature, associativity, the major sector, physical and material character, individuality, down to minor sector. All right.
Although you are entered only upon the registry of the major sector of Splendon, which embraces the local universe of your origin, you will have to pass through every one of the 10 major divisions of our super universe. You will see all 30 of the Avantan perfections of days before you reach Uversa.
Gives you a little sense, you know, well, one of them can be away for a while, but you're going to see them all. So, you know, you're not going to be blowing through there very fast. Okay. Now here, this is in the wake. It was in this section that they told us, you know, that you want to really carefully reflect on the coinage of names for things. Splendon. Okay, now what's the literal etymological meaning? It means level upland. We're using it as a proper noun. The level upland. Okay, why? They're just explaining it in this paragraph. This is the paragraph that really describes why it's called that. As you're ascending, you get to your first nebular upland, Neb Adon. Okay, so you're climbing, little plateau, little upland at the local universe headquarters, and then you start climbing again, and then they're saying you get up to the major sector, and there's it's an upland. You think you're not climbing all the way to, you know, the upland is there, and it's the level one. It's where it's level all the way around the super universe. You're going to go to all 10. That's a level plane there. It's the level upland. It's where you're going to level out by going to all 10, spending time in all 10. You're going to level out all of the local mindal differences. Yeah, all the local universes in a particular major sector are all within one of the 10 flavors of mind in a super universe. You've got one flavor of unity brought down into a super universe connected to the 10 flavors of individuality. So there's 10 different associative links. You have 10 different flavors of associativity, 10 different flavors of mind in the 10 major sectors. You know, you start out in one of those and you get your mind wrapped around that one fold of the tenfold mind in Orvinton. Then you've got to wrap your mind around the other nine. And once you've done that, you've leveled out that whole individuality difference, gotten yourself up and ready for the unity. But you can't engage that unity if you are totally biased to one of the 10 flavors of individuality. You got to level that out. You got to get above that. You got to transcend that. So you got to go all the way around. When you're done, you know, then there you are. Now you're ready to engage the unity directly. Okay, so that's why they call it Splandon. It's the level upland. It's like, oh, well, that's not like a name that's somehow describing how this major sector is a different flavor. You could call every major sector Splandon. The level up. Yeah, see, they coined a name that gives you the truth of its relationship to your ascension. Same way with Neb Adon. Neb Adon's not a name that tells you how this flavor is different than Avalon. Or now those other local universes, see, they're giving you some flavor names there that you need to figure out. But Neb Adon just means first nebular upland, you know, the first upland in the Milky Way nebula of your ascension. Okay? So again, it's a generic name describing its truth relative to your ascension scheme. Like we said, they're translating the truth. Now, what kind of a factual name our major sector has in the super universe tongue, who knows? Yeah. Yeah. You know the super universe tongue doesn't have an English word in it, you know, with Latin roots, Splandon. Okay. just knowing that what they told you there, you know, it gets you from trying to somehow go off in some squirrely rationalization scheme, trying to think about how Splandon describes our particular flavor. That's not the truth of that coinage.
How do they get to the 30?
So you have 210 total, right? Divided by 7 is 30. See, there's just 30 in our super universe. 3 in each of 10, so 30. All right, and maybe just one other thing. Don't forget, we mentioned this last time. You know, when they say you will early see the perfections of days when you advance to the headquarters of Splandon, I mean, it's not like you can't see them until you get there as a second stage spirit. Remember, they told you can, even the ancients of days, you can see as a first stage spirit. It's just that you're not going to bump into them until you actually get there, because they're either two of them are always there. Or if one isn't, he goes up, not down. So you're just not going to bump into him, into one of them, until you get there. And obviously, you're not going to bump into an ancient of days until you get there, because they can't go anywhere.
So Lucifer may have been right. We've become debauched by our much disciplined prolonged training.
Well, we know he wasn't right, but you can see where the opportunity, where the potential for that tangent lies. Yes. Yeah. I mean, just think about, okay, you know, we've been at this for, you know, over an hour already, you know, just on one section, trying to notice all, I mean, you know, and this is just, you know, embryonic preschool, you know, that we're doing here. I mean, think about what we've got to engage by the time we've ascended to the major sector level. I mean, you know, books of trillions of pages have been absorbed, you know, by us. I mean, you know, we're at the level where we're starting to function with the government on high ends. I mean, we are so beyond where we are now. And that doesn't happen by just some sort of fiat finger snap. That happens experientially. That's an experiential acquirement. That's going to require lots and lots of, yeah. That
we'll be able to talk to
any
of them, or they're too high up.
Oh, no. I mean, that was the whole point of, I mean, think about the, you know, this scene. The perfectionist aides in person administer the group pledges to the ascending graduates of the major sector schools, you know? So just like when you graduate and you walk across the stage and you get to shake the, you know, the chancellor's hand, or whatever. Okay, I mean, yeah, they're right there, you know, probably gave you a big hug, a big Trinity embrace. Okay.
I hear you, Trinity knuckle.
I give you a little noogie. Yeah. you know, and just, we were just talking about that. You know, maybe you for a moment just kind of disappear in their embrace. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it may be a lot more than just a handshake. Yeah. It may be a moment of real personal intimacy. Kind of like when the creative mother spirit, well, the creative spirit, when the creative spirit is first birthed out of the infinite spirit and immediately is, you know, enveloped by the master spirit. So, yeah, who said that? Someone, you know, I guess, was it you, Nick? I mean, again, you know, you always want to allow for a being like this to have that mother, like, you know, even though they're, you know, they're often doing the he thing, you know, a lot here as administrators. They're Trinity origins, so, you know, they're about immanence, not transcendence, not apartness, okay? All right, how about the recents of days?
Five, the recents of days. The recents of days are the youngest of the supreme directors of the super universes. In groups of three, they preside over the affairs of the minor sectors. In nature, they are coordinate with the perfections of days, but in administrative authority, they are subordinate. There are just 21,000 of these personally glorious and divinely efficient Trinity personalities. They were created simultaneously, and together they passed through their Havona training under the Eternals of Days.
Well, you know, we can be thankful that they aren't totally pedantic. You notice they didn't say, and that's why they're called Recents of Days. if they had to, they're thinking, oh, like, if we have to say that, it's hopeless. The fact that they're the youngest, yes, is why they're called the Recents of Days. You know, and notice here, they're coordinate with the perfections of days, but they're not the vicegerents of the Ancients of Days. But in administrative authority, they are subordinate. So now there's a big mystery there, exactly. Okay, so if they're pretty much the same divinity quality as a perfection of days, you know, why are they subordinate in authority? I mean, the only clue you have is their name. I mean, apparently, you know, I mean, the fact that it isn't just a coincidence that they're born after, you know, born, quote unquote, trinitized after the perfections of days, that must be because they're in some way a lesser, a subsequent totality attitude expression. They must be in some way, I mean, it might be the same quality, but not as big a quantity, for instance. Anyway, maybe a way to think of it. And that's why they're subordinate. So if quality is the only thing that's a key, they're right there with the perfections of the days. But if quantity is an issue, then they're, you know, then you're going to need a perfection of days. you know, and that, you know, when you think about it like that, even literally, I mean, the ancients of days are, you know, we associate them with the whole super universe. And we tend to think of the perfections as just a major sector. But these are all uniform, and we just saw how we have to go through all the major sectors. It's not surprising, see, that one of those perfections of days could kind of take on a whole universe connection and be a vicegerent for the ancients of days. But as we'll see in a minute here, I mean, the eternals of days don't, just don't have that sort of quality.
How did the perfections of days come to be, and did they pass through some kind of training?
That's what they're mentioning up in that 1, 2, 3, the fourth paragraph back in the previous section, that all of these beings, even the perfections of days and the recents of days, went through a training session. Well, okay, with the simultaneously, remember, you know, that's all of the recents of days were created at the same time.
I got that.
Okay. But the perfections of days were all created at the same time prior to that.
Okay.
Okay, and...
Right. I was wondering if those were parallel.
And, you're left to just speculate on whether or not... I mean, they probably overlapped some, but I suppose the perfections of the days started out in their training, and then, you know, later on the recents of days came in and overlapped with them some, I guess. whether or not all of the perfections and recents of days came out to the super universes all at the same time, you know, I don't know. let's see. We're just on the second paragraph, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
The recents of days have a core of associates and assistants similar to that of the perfections of days. In addition, they have assigned to them enormous numbers of the various subordinate orders of celestial beings. In the administration of the minor sectors, they utilize large numbers of the resident ascending mortals, the personnel of the various courtesy colonies, and the various groups originating in the infinite spirit.
Okay, so a little bit different. They've got the whole Trinity thing happening, but they're also engaging some others. You know, including us, like I was saying. See, we get involved here as ascending mortals. In part that's, you know, courtesy colony stuff, just that. Do you remember about the courtesy colonies? They describe them in paper 30 when they're describing all those, you know, the different orders of beings. I mean, amongst the courtesy colonies, you have reversion directors, celestial artisans, star students, that collection. So in other words, you know, there's a whole diversity that they're also engaging. And, I mean, you can immediately be suspicious of why, because unlike the major sector, which has Trinity government both below and above it, it's totally surrounded by Trinity government, the minor sector is interfacing with the dual government of the local universe and all the ascenders and, you know, various things. So, see, they have a mixture. They've got some that are kind of the flavor from below and some that are flavor from above. Let's see, was there anything else in there? No, I think that's it. Just go ahead. And probably... just the fact that they word it that way, you know, you're first thinking, well, like solitary messengers and you know all the very messenger hosts and ministering spirits. Yeah, but also remember, there's vastly more beings of the infinite spirit that they don't reveal than are revealed. So it could be huge numbers. Probably in the various word there is indicating there's probably an awful lot of beings that they haven't revealed to us there.
The governments of the minor sectors are very largely, though not exclusively, concerned with the great physical problems of the super universe. Physical problems. The minor sector spheres are the headquarters of the master physical controllers. On these worlds, ascending mortals carry on studies and experiments having to do with an examination of the activities of the third order of the supreme power centers and of all seven orders of the master physical controllers.
Okay, so that's... That's paper 29 stuff with the power beings. You have those seven different orders of master physical controllers. The third order of centers, that's the super universe centers. Okay, so in other words, you're going to study, once energy has gotten down into the primary node of the super universe and is being gridded out into the super universe, you're going to be studying all that. It's like, well, why? Why do I need to get into all this physics? Okay. Again, remember what the fundamental philosophical threefoldness is. You can talk about material, mindful and spiritual. You're talking about the energy threefold. But philosophically, you've got individuality, associativity, and unity. Okay. Before you can work on associativity and getting all 10 flavors and getting up, you have to establish yourself firmly in individuality. And it's this literal. In order for you to really fully individuate yourself as a first stage spirit in the cosmos, you have to intimately sort of get your mind wrapped around, come into resonance with the foundational individuality of the cosmos. Okay. I'll jump ahead here. Remember what name they give for our minor sector. You might be suspicious. It's probably probably a general name like Splanon again too. It's Ensa. Well, the word Ensa is just a word in the dictionary. Okay? It means being, sort of innate beingness. So it means the level of being. You're getting up there and you're, as a being, you're an individual. You are learning, at a deep fundamental level, what the foundational individuality of the cosmos is, and you are becoming like that. And it's apparently an amazingly interactive, experiential, experimental, even, process. Very fascinating. So, studies and experiments.
Are we first stage spirits at this point?
Yeah, you leave the local universe as a first stage spirit. And then your second stage at the major sector and third stage at headquarters.
First thing at that level is to become completely individualized.
Yeah. See, and remember, you're familiar with this. Right. You're familiar with this process. You just went through the three stages in Marantia. Now you're going to do it in spirit. You have individuality, associativity, unity of Marantia nature as you go up to the local universe. So the first thing that you're doing, you have this sort of precursor stuff on the mansion worlds to kind of overcome all of the inadequacies of your mortal life, all the differences between mortal lives. Once you've got that out of the way, on the local system headquarters, you are becoming a fully founded Marantia individual. You're establishing your Marantia individuality definitively. Once we have definitive Marantia individuals, we can go up to the constellation level. And now that you're not some fuzzy blob, you're a definitive individual, and you got another definitive individual, you can talk about a definitive association between those individuals, that socialization of Marantia individuals at the constellation level. And then finally, getting through all the associativity of Marantia, you can go up to the unity of Marantia at the local universe headquarters. So you did it there. Now you're going to do it again at the next notch up in a more direct spirit being fashion. I'm going to get myself, and think about that. See, I'm a first stage spirit. The first thing I do is get a definitive connection to matter. are matter and spirit dichotomy, a dichotomy? You know, is matter something to be rejected? You know, is spirit the true substance and matter a shadow like Plato? No. Okay? The very first thing you're doing as a spirit being is getting a definitive grounding in matter, just like the Father has when he stands on the aisle. Okay? You're going to get grounded like he's grounded on the matter of the aisle. And that's the first thing you do.
First get up there and we're to have the launch in mind, that it's not going to, we won't have the containment of our brain or any of this stuff, and so it could, like, you said it could, like, float and we could kind of...
Well, your consciousness is not so localized. You can reach out in your consciousness stably more. I mean, some, you know, humans right now can reach out, but it's pretty, you know, flaky and fuzzy, okay, and hard to you know, have any definitive character to it, you know, ESP and things like that. But there, you know, you'll be much more solidly grounded, and you can stably reach out, and you know.
When you first get there,
you're going to need some training in this, because you, you're probably going to have a lot of tendency to go out and. Poke your nose in other people's business as you shouldn't be. So, you know, they give you all this training and the ethics of, you know, Marantia overlap and all that sort of stuff, you know, so that you don't accidentally rape someone, you know. You know, in Marantia, overlapping your Marantia energy, you know, let alone, even if you don't get that intimate, but just, you know, there's going to be a whole etiquette to you know, non- air molecule jiggling communication. I mean, you know, if we're going to connect mindily, there's going to be a whole etiquette to that we're going to have to learn, you know, what, you know, what's proper and what's not. You know, everyone's going to have a space, you know, that still is going to be respected, you know, to some degree, even if the beings on high, you know, are, you know, examining us with a microscope. But down where we are, you know, we still need our space, because we need to have a space that we can be relative, that's relatively ours to engage and mature within without people poking in it, okay? So there's going to be an etiquette. let's see. All right, yeah, let's keep going here.
Since the regime of a minor sector is so extensively concerned with physical problems, its three recents of days are seldom together on the capital sphere. Most of the time, one is away in conference with the perfections of days of the supervising major sector, or absent while representing the Ancients of Days at the Paradise Conclaves of the High Trinity Origin Beings. They alternate with the perfections of days in representing the Ancients of Days at the Supreme Councils on Paradise. Meanwhile, another recent of days may be away on a tour of inspection of the headquarters worlds of the local universes belonging to this jurisdiction. But at least one of these rulers always remains on duty at the headquarters of a minor sector.
So just as we should have been suspecting, you get down to the individuality level, yeah, you just need to have one there. One can engage individuality. Two can be away. You know, again, notice they're describing just what I was saying. There's these two different interfaces. One of them might be a way to, you know, be going up and engaging the perfection of days of his major sector. Or, you know, and this is something that we tend to forget. I mean, the recents of days are trying to, you know, supervise all those creator sons and creator mother spirits. There's 100 local universes that they have to try to... deal with, and all these very definitive differences of those creator sons. I mean, the recents of days are actually a pretty important phenomenon relative to our immediate, you know, universe career. They're overseeing our creator son, creator mother spirit in this local universe. Remember we mentioned how the creator sons will occasionally go up for a confab, yeah, at the minor sector headquarters. Okay, so just kind of keep that in mind, that that's always, you know, in play, that there is this interface of the Trinity government to the dual, you know, government here. Let's see. There was a couple other things in there. Okay, so one, notice they alternate with the perfections of days in representing the ancients of days. So, like we said, see, that's telling you, quality-wise, if you want to say it that way, they must be interchangeable, the perfections and the recents, because they can both sub for the ancients of days and those paradise confabs. Okay? Yeah. But there has to be some sort of, like, quantity, quote-unquote, like, difference between the two of them. Okay, so then you can have the one going up. But just notice the way they start that out. Just the challenge of the wording of that first sentence. Since the regime of a minor sector is so extensively concerned with physical problems, its three recents of days are seldom together on the capital sphere. Okay. Now, that, you're going, huh? I mean, initially that should be a really, why does the first clause imply the second? Okay. Why is this such a definitive deductive step here that they're describing? I mean, can you understand? I mean, and when they word it that way, if you're just thinking initially and immaturely, simplistically about this, it's like, well, because it's so extensively concerned with physical problems, they're seldom together. I mean, like, matter is very problematic, and they're constantly running around putting out fires. I mean, you know, how am I supposed to interpret that? But see, if you know that fundamentally what is anchored on that headquarters world is individuality, it only takes one to anchor the individuality, then not surprisingly, you know, two of them are off and away. See, if you have the philosophical rather than that simplistic matter, mind, spirit, just initial energy sort of, you know, then you understand A implies B in the sentence. But you've got to have that. They're expecting, you know, they're not telling you that you need to develop that. They're just leaving that as a mystery for you to try to get yourself up to the point where you can understand why that sentence is true. They do that a lot. That's another thing that that you'll see a lot is a very mature expectation of you. You know, one that the real fundamental truth is not sort of, they're not attempting to spoon feed it to you. It's sort of hidden within the construct. And two, I mean, if you've never thought about causal thinking, if you've never worked on critical thinking, you're not even going to, have a question mark. You're just going to go, oh, it's a mysterious, no, it's not a mystical sentence. It's some sort of a scientifically like written sentence. Well, can I figure out what the heck I'm supposed to be thinking there? So that's kind of a really fun little subtle challenge that they threw in there. But see, I've been priming you all the time here. See, the thing that you have to have figured out is that you've got these three levels of this unity, associativity, individuality at the super and local universe levels. Once you have that fundamental recognition of the threefold actuality, okay, then everything can be understood if you just keep that in mind. That's a very, very, very fundamental fact. Start there. If you can't understand it directly with that, okay, then it's maybe some subtler thing. Okay, but it's highly likely, it's just, if it's a three, and you're just talking about basic nature of things, it's the threefold actuality. It's probably not the Father, Son, Spirit. Yeah. If it's just an actuality thing, yeah. So try to understand it. Individuality, associativity, unity. That's what leads you to figuring out the adjutants. Oh, yeah, they're individuality, associativity, unity. That's the pattern. And it's just an actuality thing. That's what the And you know it's at least six and one to make seven. You know, and then, you know, just a moment, oh, it's actually three and one to make seven. And then you know what the three is. Okay. When you notice that there's, you know, that you have this difference, for instance, between the first three and the second three, you know, that the first three are much more in the moment, the second three are more long-term, you know, that recognition, that twofold recognition, you know, just leaves you with an obvious recognition then that the three is this three. And you can put them in the chart. And you can begin to understand, you know, more directly what the adjutants are about. And, you know, and they aren't just names. They aren't just, how did they say it here? They aren't just arbitrary designations that are meaningless. Right? Yeah, not to mention, of course, that they're coming from Isaiah, you know, and then there's that you can bring in, too. the actual wording that they're using there. Yeah, Joan?
What you're saying reminds me, I'm reading in the Discourse on True Religion, and this phrase, the religion of the spirit means effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress.
Yep.
And the religion of the mind, the theology of authority, requires little or none of these exertions from its formal believers.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, we're working all the way.
Yeah, and it does. It doesn't stop. Those who listen to Symmetry of Soul know I stress that sequence of eight words a lot. You know, that's a very, very important sequence. That all progress is achieved through first effort, then struggle, then conflict. If you haven't experienced conflict, you're delusional if you think you've progressed. There is no such thing as progression that didn't go through conflict.
Isn't that kind of like the problem with making assumptions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, like a simple example is the revelators say, you know how you've noticed that a lot of times you can acquire wisdom from tribulation? They say, well, actually, the only way to acquire wisdom is through tribulation. You're delusional if you think you acquired wisdom without tribulation. There is no such thing. We mentioned the Lucifer papers. You know, a very important thing about recognizing that's an immutable sequence. There's a lot of people today that think that you can establish progress by fiat. Progress is a powerful spirit word in a lot of people's minds today. You know, we turn it into an ism these days. That's the Lucifer rebellion. Thinking that you can skip the effort, struggle, conflict. That's just a bunch of debauching, you know. Okay. No. To think that you can skip the effort, struggle, conflict and just establish something that's progressive, you know, by legislation or, you know, or regulation or something like this, okay? No, okay, that's what Lucifer thought. Lucifer was thinking, you know, why don't we just skip all the fol-de-rol? Why don't we just establish a progressive universe? Just declare it, you know? What does it say in those religion papers? Change without growth is potential evil. You know, and Lucifer's the poster child for the actualization of that potential. You can't establish change without growth. You can't skip the effort, struggle, conflict. The effort, struggle, conflict guarantees that there's growth, perfecting spirit, growth that comes down into progressing mind. It comes down into adapting life. That goes down into varying things, change. Growth, progress, adaptation, change. Change has to be the result of a long top-down process. You can't just, you know, change.
So after you get the, like, at my job, for instance, there's been effort, struggle, now there's a little bit of conflict.
And so
there's a little bit of conflict. So now, after we reach the conflict, now we can surpass that and kind of grow.
If there's persons involved,
yeah,
there's a next step. Notice what the next step is, faith. Okay, well, if there's just selves, selves don't have faith. Selves have beliefs. And beliefs just make the conflict all the more, you know. No, the only way to get to progress is as a person. A person can overcome conflict. An animal origin self can't.
So what if you're dealing with an animal origin self?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A self will declare. Well, we just have to agree to disagree. There's no other choice.
Yeah.
That's the end.
Yeah. There's no going forward to yourselves. There's just a stalemate. And then there's wishful thinking that somehow, well, we could just all tolerate one another. We could coexist. No. No. I mean, I can maybe say, there's no magical coexistence of those symbols on that bumper sticker. The only solution is going up. We have to transcend all of those evolutionary religions, those religions of authority and confusion and whatnot. And only persons can do that. But it's sad to record, okay? Because it's sad to record, it's just wishful thinking that we're going to coexist. Selves have definitive beliefs that they like to absolutize, and the domains of these absolutized selves have been growing until now they're butting against each other. We're not isolated in little nooks where we can pretend we're the only creatures on the planet and God loves us, and we're the chosen ones. We're butting against each other, and there's, the conflict is going to be inescapable, as we go forward, more and more and more. And only persons can deal with this. Effort, struggle, conflict, faith, and then determination, and love, loyalty, and then and only then progress.
So you could do those even though you were dealing with
this. And an example of, where to start with the questions like, well, okay, if I'm trying to be more personal in my functioning here, but I'm dealing with those that's kind of sad to record, how can I go about that? Of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value is to know the religious life of Jesus and how he lived it. Look in the Jesus paper. See if you can find examples of how he did those things. Not Jesus the God, not Michael. Jesus the man. The fourth epical revelation. Jesus the man. That's incredibly valuable knowledge that we've been given to help us. Well, how did he handle that situation? Invariably, what you know what you find. You're going, well, wow, I don't think I'm up to that kind of a response. Well, I better take delight in cultivating. Jesus spent a very, very long time working really, really hard to get to the point where he could function like that and interacting with people. He doesn't interact like that because he's a God. If he's doing that because he's a God, it's of absolutely no use to us. Just burn part four, okay? It's of completely no use to you. It's of greatest value because it's the faith of Jesus, the man, that effort, struggle, conflict, faith, okay? That's why it's valuable. Forget about the God part, okay? It's the man, and the fourth epical revelation is not the teachings of Jesus. The fourth epical revelation is Jesus of Nazareth. It's the man. That's the revelation. Part four is not the fourth epical revelation. That's the teachings of Jesus. That's not the revelation is the faith of Jesus the man. Like they tell you in the last paper in the book, very definitively. Okay. But part four has now been given to us in the fifth epical revelation because we need some knowledge of all human knowledge. Okay? That knowledge to answer these practical questions. You know, where you're going, I'm not just going to go off in a monastery and try to live just an inner life. I'm actually going to try to engage an outer life now that I have some inner life. Guess what you find? The moment that inner life tries to interact with the outer life, you get struggle and conflict. No matter how clever you are in your effort. and we need the fifth epical revelation. We need some practical stuff. You know, but part four is a violation of the fourth epical revelation mandate. It gives us stuff about how spirit relates, you know, how value relates to things. The fourth epical revelation is just about the value, the spiritual uplifter. The midwayers have gotten permission for those who find this book, for them to find a violation of the fourth epical mandate, you know, to find a discussion of the whole picture, not just the spiritual part. Jesus was very careful to not bring up any social thing, anything where, you know, this is the social block, anything where you're relating value to individuality, unity to individuality. He was just trying to get people to grab a hold of the unity in the inner life, get the process started. He's there revealing the will of the Father. The Father is the initiator. He's trying to get you initiated. But to go beyond the initiation is going beyond the fourth epical revelation limitations. Okay, part four talks all kinds about social, about the associative. You know, it does what Jesus hoped the apostles wouldn't do, that they wouldn't bring in social stuff, that they would keep it unity at the unity level so it could go to the whole planet. It's a dispensational revelation. It's meant to be universalized. Okay, but because they brought in individuality and hence the relationship of unity and individuality, associativity, social things and whatnot, it wasn't universalizable. But that's, the fifth epical revelation is not just about unity. It's about the whole picture we've just been talking about. It's about individuality, associativity, and unity, and the harmony of the three, cosmic consciousness. It's not just about spiritual consciousness.
I don't know, I'm just starting to think about your question about conflict, and I was thinking that amazing story where the husband is beating up on the wife.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's conflict. And how Jesus dealt with that is so amazing.
Yeah.
And you try to, if you imagine yourself in a situation where there's conflict going on in front of you, mm-hmm. and you think you'd like to do something to ameliorate it, and you have no idea where to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's that, there's examples of that overt, that outer life conflict, two selves butting heads. There's also examples of a single individual in an inner life conflict. Yeah, bet you guys can think of an example of a lad who was. An individual who's he's been efforting and struggling, and he's in full blown conflict, but it's all in here. You know, and Jesus shows how he helped that person bring faith into that inner life conflict and move forward. Okay.
And then he had a spectacular outer life.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
So you would just have faith then. You could just bring the conflict into faith.
Well, see now if faith is fancy belief, okay, that's not going to work. Again, you got to have. It's got to be the definition of faith in the fifth epical revelation, not in the dictionary. Okay, if it's the definition of faith in the dictionary, then it's not going to get you anywhere. It needs to be this kind of faith. And it's like, well, what is? Think about the various little nuggets that we have Well, one way to think about faith is personal recognition. Okay, if I have an outer life conflict, if I can use my insight to see through the conflicting self and recognize the person within and connect with that, of course, that's what Jesus, he always did. He poked his finger through the confused self and touched the personalized self at the core, in the heart, okay? He recognized the person. Faith is personal recognition. He established a faith connection, person to person, which you can do, like we're saying, standing in front of that person, okay? I can't do that on the internet. No. Okay. But you can do that. And he was a master at it, of penetrating through all the fog and touching that faint little flicker of faith self. Okay, that personalized self in the temple within. And the moment the two persons touched, then everything changed. See, that most of the time what he did is just regrounded the person. People are floundering because they've let go of their grounding. You just need to remind them to notice that their feet are on solid ground. You know, they think they're drowning in a bottomless ocean of despair. No, you're not. Did you notice that your feet are planted on the Isle of Paradise? Okay. Oh, you're right. Yeah, it is okay. All you have to do is just get them to remember that. I mean, the only time that's not possible is if they've so disrupted their mind that they're beginning to lose their connection to the cosmos. They're beginning to lose their personal nature. And you'll see that, I mean, they'll start to function more just uncontrollably like a liquid than like a solid. You know, they'll sit there uncontrollably rocking or something. I mean, they're not grounded on the aisle. If you can't manifest a stillness that reflects the motionlessness of the aisle, you're losing your connection to the cosmos and its grounding in the aisle, which you didn't choose. You were given that by grace. You were given a solid footing on the aisle by grace. But if you've used your personality gift, your free will, to start sawing at that foundation point, if you manage to succeed in going all the way through, all the king's horses, it doesn't matter if Jesus the man and the God is standing right in front of that person, he can't do anything for them. There's no way he can remind them that they're still on solid ground because they aren't anymore. Okay, and he would pass by. Okay. But most of us are not cosmically insane yet, okay, even if we're really troubled, you know, and a solid, you know, wise personal linkage can get them to just reground. And most of it takes care of itself. Once they just remember that they are standing on solid ground, they take a deep breath and they soldier on. Effort, struggle, conflict, faith, what follows it? That deep breath, a new determination to soldier on. Okay? That's what happens. It just happens naturally. Okay? God has given us that by grace. You know, we've forgotten that we have that. We're looking over here. No, forget about it. Grab a hold of this and then
turn that song off for a minute.
and while they're taking that deep breath, you just push over and push the off button on the saw, and they'll forget about the saw.
Progress. It's like you're progressing in a reality that's already there, in a sense, are you not?
Right. You progress because
part of the greater
right. Issue. You've struck step with the motion that is progress. The whole, So it's a matter of letting go of a self that's falsely absolutizing, concretizing itself let go. Go with the flow of the universal harmony of God the Mother. Okay. All right, let's read that last little bit.
You will all sometime know the three recent of days in charge of Ensa, your minor sector, since you must pass through their hands on your way inward to the training worlds of the major sectors. In ascending to Uversa, you will pass through only one group of the minor sector training spheres.
Okay, so just that little footnote. But you notice that they, in ascending to Uversa, come back out, of course, you're going to be going all over. Not just, you know, and of course, not immediately even your super universe, but other super universes. So you'll get very familiar with all the minor sectors all over the Milky Way galaxy. And again, see, you will all sometime know the three. So again, you'll be there long enough, even though most of the time it says two of them are gone, you'll be there plenty long enough that you'll get to know all three. So it's going to take you a while to get yourself grounded.
This isn't a one-day affair.
There may be only eight worlds, but don't misjudge it with that numerical fact. Just because there aren't hundreds of worlds, okay, you're going to still be there a long time. They're going to be really big worlds too. I mean, if they're the headquarters for the master physical controllers, there's a lot of master physical controllers, so these are probably pretty good sized worlds. Yep.
I looked up the definition for ENSA on this book, and it says an organization which arranged a variety of entertainment for the British Armed Services during the Second World War.
Well, that's it.
It's like, Well, maybe that's not what they meant. I'll just quickly comment on that before we wrap up. That's a good example of when you go to try to figure out the etymologies of these words. It's trivial to find, at least six, if not a dozen, possibilities without much work. And you've got to have the recognition to sort through those, and methodically refute them one after another, and avoid the temptation to rationalize the one that initially is the shiniest to you. You're trying to find the true etymology, not just, a reflection of yourself.
Can you say that again?
Okay, so ENS, you can literally look the word ENS up in the dictionary. Just look up ENS in the dictionary. Okay, and there's a handful of words where they use the Latin noun-forming suffix, just that basic first declension nominative Latin suffix a, to make a noun. And the point of those nouns is that you have some root concept that you can figure out the literal meaning of, and then there's an assumed, if you will, addition to that the a suffix is indicating. Like you have being is just the word ens. But, obviously it's the name of a minor sector, okay? So it doesn't just mean being or beingness. It means it's the level of being. So that level of part is sort of just innate in the taking that root and making it a noun. They do that with grand fanda, for instance, as well. So it just takes, you know how they're using it, so you can add in. But the other words, the ones that don't end in that A like that, then the suffix too is part of the literal thing, and you got to figure that out. And like veranda deck or whatever, you got to figure out what deck is meaning there, there's nebadon and splandon. Those end in D-O-N's. There's also amadon. Are they the same D-O-N? No. There's actually two different D-O-N's they're using there. You got to figure out which one. And et cetera. But, all right, so that's actually a good place to stop, because the unions of days and the faithfuls of days, now we drop down into the local universe, and we have a few more complexities going on. And I'm sure we'll get through those and roll into the next paper as well. And we'll start to get those other Trinity origin beings. All right. Well, that was pretty fun. Thanks. That was a great group, guys. Let's take a little moment here.